commencing countdown. T-minus 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Ignition.
What an incredible smell, you scum!
Dear Lord Jesus, this ain't happening, man. This can't be happening, man. This ain't happening.
Inconceivable!
Autobots, transform!
Welcome to the Skiffy and Fanny Show, episode number 10.
Injecting narcotic ebooks into your brainstem since the birth of King Tut.
I'm Sean.
And I'm Jen.
And as you can see, the podcast STD is still with us.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Yes.
Happy to be here.
We're hoping to spread a little bit of that to everybody else. It'll be just like herpes. It'd be wonderful.
It will be.
Yes. So, diving straight into news, since Miss Gabberjaw usually keeps us talking for an hour.
I'm trying to keep it short now.
Yeah, it's not going to work. But anyway, first things up is something we're going to probably hate forever.
And ever.
And ever. Is The Raven. It was a short film by, was it a Mexican director or?
Brazilian?
Is it Brazilian? Okay. It's somewhere from Latin America, and I've completely forgotten, and we should have written in the show notes, but whatever.
We're Anglophiles.
Yeah, well, evil colonialism. Yeah, oh god, that's really terrible.
Terrible.
That is really terrible. Colonialism, bad. Get that. Anyway, he made this short film called The Raven. It's kind of about this guy who's got, like, telekinetic powers, and he, like, blows up cool futuristic police vehicles. It's really fun. And now it's being made into a full-length feature.
They're at least in talks about it.
At least in talks about it, yeah.
Universal Pictures wants it. And Mark Wahlberg is supposedly going to be producing and, the worst news, possibly starring in the film.
Oh, but it gets worse.
Yeah.
The writer for the film is Justin Marks,
who wrote the ever-so-brilliant Street Fighter, The Legend of Chun-Li.
Among other stupid movies that nobody has ever seen.
Because nobody wants to see them.
Yeah,
because
they're terrible. So
basically, they've taken a fantastic dystopian short film. Fantastic. It was low budget, $5,000. Shot over a weekend with an amazing stunt guy and fantastic special effects. And they're going to turn it into a big budget nightmare.
With Mark Wahlberg. See, now if it had been his brother, I would have been okay with it because I like his brother.
Donnie?
Yeah, his brother acts.
He does act incredibly well. And I got to say, I like Mark Wahlberg in some of the things he's done. Except I think I'm ruined by the fact that the guy in the short film seems incredibly talented. He probably doesn't have the acting chops for a full-length movie, but I would like to at least give him a shot. Plus, there's the whole issue of race bending, you know.
Yeah, well, I mean, because the main character in this, the actor is, I think you said you looked it up and he was, like,
Asian, Latino.
But the point is, he's fairly dark-skinned, and to most he would look, I don't know what he would look like, I guess, to most, because... But the point is he's a dark-skinned fellow, and Mark Wahlberg is whiter than I am, so... And it is kind of like, it really bugs me, because, like, look, Mark Wahlberg cannot do the stuff this guy does physically.
No. Oh, for sure,
and this guy can already do these things. And, I mean, he can't be that bad an actor.
I doubt it. I mean, he's been doing stunt work for years. And there have been stuntmen who have successfully translated onto the big screen, so...
I mean, it's not like they're going to do this, like, next week. Like, couldn't they, you know, they cast him, maybe send him through... I don't know, acting classes, or I don't know, like, I
probably,
maybe that's just not what Hollywood would do, because that's an expense, but it just seems like, why wouldn't you keep this guy?
With the talent he's shown in the short film, I don't see any reason not to, but at the same time, movie theaters, or movie production companies want big names to star in films, particularly, you know, their big budget science fiction films. And,
yeah, but I mean, you wouldn't even need to do this big budget. I mean, you could give them, like,
well, obviously, considering the guy spent $5,000 and got an amazing 6 minutes out of it, you know.
Yeah, I mean, couldn't they have done, like, why couldn't they have negotiated for maybe, like, I don't know, $25 million. That's a fairly small budget in Hollywood.
You can, that is.
And, yeah, and you could do, you know, he just ups the special effects, makes them slightly better. He directs, he maybe hires somebody to write, or he writes it himself, or whatever. I mean, for $25 million, you get this guy in, and you do it, you can make an amazing film that would be on par, I think, with something like District 9, which was, I think their budget was fairly small, too. I mean, it was larger than that, but still fairly small, right?
Well, look at the Space Nazi film we talked about last week. They're doing that for $11
million. Eight and a half.
Whatever. Barely anything.
Right.
And I have pretty high hopes for that film, so...
Yeah,
why not?
Exception for that film being that I don't think they put in their budget for showing it on screens, movie screens.
Right. And
it's
Mark,
probably going straight to DVD. So you'd have to throw in money for that. But it's just...
Sometimes it's very sad and tragic.
I mean, unless Mark Wahlberg
is... The Hollywood industry does.
Unless Mark Wahlberg's not playing like the guy with the powers.
Oh, like, yeah, maybe. But unfortunately, I think he probably would be. So... Whatever.
It'd be just like Max Payne meets Planet of the Apes. So.
Once again, great short film. Ruined by Hollywood.
Rape. Total Hollywood rapage.
Which hopefully won't happen to the next film we're talking about.
No, it will. No.
I think they're doing good by it.
But I have a feeling that it's going to suck.
Well, okay. Sorry. To let you know, we are discussing The Avengers, which was just announced that at Comic-Con this weekend, Joss Whedon is going to be directing. And that's fantastically skiffly and fantasy news, because obviously we're all cult nerds.
Yeah, and it's not
and
official.
Joss Whedon is our hero.
It's not official. He said it's official. But it seems like he's hesitant to say it's, like, on paper official.
I'm pretty sure it's almost completely official. They're probably waiting until the Marvel panel tomorrow to completely confirm it. However, it's pretty much totally set in stone, I imagine.
Yeah, probably.
Otherwise, they wouldn't be letting the number of rumors from the specific people putting it out.
That's true, because, I mean, the rumors are coming from, like, everywhere, really. So
basically. So.
Point is, Avengers, for those of you that don't know, I'm assuming you will, but the Avengers is sort of like, it's a collection of all of the characters working together. I mean, you've got, like, Captain America.
It's the Marvel version of Justice League.
Okay, I guess that's one way to look. I mean, we got X-Men, though. I mean, they're kind of Justice League, but whatever. X-Men are better, but...
Well, except that the Avengers is a collection of characters from... They have their own standalone comics. And, you know, are still in this other group. Much like Justice League.
Okay, well... So, I mean, it's good news because I like Joss Whedon. I think we both probably love Joss Whedon. He's really good. And, you know, we have Robert Downey Jr.
Yes.
And you know, basically what's been established in the Iron Man movies... I am not excited about Thor. I think that's going to suck chunks.
I don't think Thor is going to suck chunks. I'm actually really excited about it, only because Kenneth Branagh is directing, and I've got really high hopes for Chris Hemsworth. And then Natalie Portman's in it, Anthony Hopkins. All in all, I think it's going to be absolutely brilliant. I think just based on the fact that Kenneth Branagh, who is a traditionally Shakespearean director, is doing this, I think it's going to be amazing. So...
It's just, whatever. Okay. And they still have to recast for the Hulk, because apparently Ed Norton's not going to be the Hulk, which is fine by me, because neither of the Hulks are good, but, you know.
I did like the second Hulk. I like the Edward Norton Hulk a lot more than I liked the other one. But apparently there's rumors that Mark Ruffalo is going to be playing the Hulk for the Avengers film. And then, of course, they have the people coming back from S.H.I.E.L.D., you know, Samuel L. Jackson and
Scarlett Johansson,
who I hate, but whatever. And then...
Chris Evans!
Oh, right, Chris Evans, because they're doing the Captain America film.
Woo!
I think that'll be awesome. I'm more cautious about the Captain America film than I am about the Thor one. But
well, that's because if the Thor one sucks, it doesn't matter because Thor is retarded. But
right,
if,
apparently
if,
nobody cares about Thor.
Nobody really cares about Thor. They're going to Thor movie because it's campy and ridiculous, and it reminds me of the guy from Adventures in Babysitting. That's why.
You just haven't read the right Thor comics.
I just don't care about Thor. It's just dumb. Anyway, but Chris Evans as Captain America, and Captain America is like super important to this whole ordeal. And if that sucks, if that folds, then we're screwed.
We will be screwed. And actually, the latest news on Captain America, which was really interesting, the director is Joe Johnston. And he has come out and publicly said that he is not going to make Captain America be some sort of flag-waving patriot, which but might piss off people who want him to be a flag-waving patriot, but makes me happy. Well, kind of, except that they have, they do have instances where there was apparently a series where he was less flag-waving patriot and more just good guy who, wanted to fight for the causes of good, not necessarily for America.
I know, but his damn suit is a freaking flag.
So?
He's a walking endorsement for America.
Well, right. Just because Americans hire him and make him doesn't mean he has to be a flag waver.
He already is a flag waver. He is a flag.
Well, in that sense, yes.
He's a walking flag. He doesn't have to, you know.
He doesn't really have much of a choice. But in terms of his what he says, it will be less, America is the greatest country in the entire world, and you all suck.
I just think the only reason that he's doing this is it won't work. It'll just sound really retarded.
Well, it would sound really retarded, because nobody likes the egotistical America.
I like egotistical America.
Shut up.
Because I am egotistical American. So
and I know you
that.
Said that I'm not allowed to mention it, but I'm going to mention it anyway. Nathan Fillion is playing the Ant-Man. So there. Suck it.
I love Nathan Fillion, but that's going to suck.
No, it's not. It's going to be freaking epic.
It's going to be totally comedic and impossible to take seriously.
Hello, Ant-Man?
Yeah, but the Ant-Man's weird and creepy.
And funny and goofy.
Not funny and goofy, just weird and creepy and
whatever. Wrong. See, you're looking at the wrong Ant-Man. They're going with the Henry Pym, and he's funny.
Whatever.
I'm excited. I think Joss Whedon directing is awesome. I think the cast is going to be awesome. Nathan Fillion is going to be awesome.
Who's the bad guy? Who's going to be the bad guy in the Avengers movie?
I'm not sure if they have a story for the Avengers yet.
Are they going to take the guy from He-Man with the skull face?
I have no idea.
Skull Thor, whatever the hell his name was?
I have no idea.
Oh, I'm sorry. I had that on my head because I saw a Masters of the Universe trailer with Dolph Lundgren.
So you were thinking of...
I was thinking, wouldn't it be interesting? We could take the Avengers and merge it with He-Man.
Yeah.
That didn't bring the laughs I thought it would, because I figured, shirtless man with a sword who says, "I have the power," and He-Man.
It's hilarious.
It's very hilarious. And then, wouldn't that be interesting to put him in a room with Robert Downey Jr.?
No.
No? You don't think there would be... you don't think he'd point out that maybe his pectoral muscles are bigger than his head?
No, I think there would be a homoerotic love scene.
Oh, well, I mean, that might...
I don't know. I'm just kidding.
All right, anyway, whatever. So, yeah, Joss Whedon's directing and hopefully to be good, but knowing Hollywood, they'll mess it up and it'll suck, so...
I don't think they'll mess it up as bad as they're messing up the Raven.
Yeah, well, I mean, unless they suddenly make, oh no, how would they mess it up?
I don't even know how they would mess it up at this point.
We know most of the cast, so...
We know the cast. I think we even know the writer, and I think it was a decent writer. So I'm...
They'll mess it up if they make Samuel L. Jackson white. they could ever get him to do that. We want you to put on white face. Can you imagine,
He would beat the crap out of them.
It would be when Christian Bale, had that scream off at the guy with the lights, but justified.
But justified. Hells justified. Yeah.
Anyway, so there's no really easy way to segue out of this, so we're just going to do a poor segue instead, which is going into this list of 75 things that make you a bibliophile.
We have definitively proven to ourselves that we are bibliophiles based on this list, which I'm sure is a completely scientific list.
Absolutely, yeah.
Totally.
Totally, all proven by scientific fact, yeah.
So the first, we're kind of skipping some of them because they just don't apply to us or
it's
we
just
don't
too
really
long.
Care.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, we just don't care. So, yeah.
First up is Harold Bloom actually makes sense. Does he?
Well, he makes sense, but you don't agree with him. Does that make sense?
I don't agree with him. You don't agree with him.
I get what he's trying to do when he builds the Western canon. I just don't agree with the Western canon.
Agreed.
Like,
I agree that the canon exists. I just don't think it should be the only canon.
Okay, yeah, no, that yeah. So and Harold Bloom is whatever. He's a stupid canon.
Yeah.
We're clearly, since we're the science fiction fantasy people, we're a little bit jaded about Harold Bloom and his evil canon.
Right, because he doesn't include things that are important or skiffy or fancy.
Oh well, he does. He has, you know, like 1984 and stuff, but no, but that's not science fiction. That's literature. It's literature. Yes, that's how they all talk.
Yeah. I'm sure. British accents.
Yes. Well, it's not British. It's like, what's wrong? Like, they're all named Nigel.
Oh, right. Okay.
Like, that's his real name, is Nigel. It's Nigel Harold Bloom.
So we've decided to go on from that. That was number three, Harold Bloom actually making sense. And in complete contrast to that, they have number five, You Fight to Diversify the Literary Canon, which is in stark contrast to, you know, Harold Bloom making sense.
Yeah, exactly.
He fought to, you know, not include things.
It's a very ethnocentric list that he has created. And yet here you are, you're fighting for diversity. It's like, you can't be like, I'm okay with the Western canon, but I'm also fighting for diversity. Like,
oh, we're bibliophiles. We don't have to make sense.
Well, this is true. But, you know, whatever. And then number
right.
seven is...
Yes, my favorite. One of them.
And this is absolutely true, is you have a little vein in your forehead that throbs whenever you hear about sparkly vampires.
Totally. If you don't have that vein in your forehead, you are not a bibliophile. I don't care how much you read. If all you read is stuff that makes you think that sparkly vampires are cool, then you're not a bibliophile. You're just a dumbass.
Vampires should not sparkle. The only kinds of vampires that should sparkle are gay vampires. I'm dead serious. Like, because that makes sense to me. Because they're covered in glitter and they have shiny flags. So
I know you're gonna piss off the gay vampires in the crowd, but
the gay vampire. I'm just like trying to imagine how many gay vampires there really are.
They're going, I'm not sparkly,
as they pour glitter over themselves. Yes.
All right, moving on, before we piss off the rest of the LGBT community. Yay. Number 12.
You ardently argued that comic books deserve to be considered literature on par with more acceptable formats like short stories and novels.
Totally. I've been arguing for this since I was five.
Yeah, and we're winning, fools. We have won. For all you, like, literary snobby people who are like, that's not literature, you can't read comic books. Well, a big middle finger to you, because University of Florida has a comic book stuff, so take that.
Hells to the I'm a little bit annoyed by the particular page that the bibliophile thing is on. It says, you know, only includes Mouse, Watchmen, and a couple other things, and doesn't actually include straight up comic books. It just includes graphic novels. But I'm sorry.
Oh, right.
Tiny comic books that are only 30 pages long are still totally literature.
Yeah, but I could see why they picked those, because those, I think,
those are the well-known ones.
Well, they're not necessarily well-known, but ones that are, I think, more
critically
accepted, I guess. I don't know.
Right, which is why I have a problem with that.
That makes sense.
Thing.
Yeah.
You know, I they should have mentioned Captain America. Hells to the yeah.
Yeah, that crazy Uber American guy. Anyway, so number 13 is...
Seeing based on the best-selling novel by in a movie trailer makes you dizzy. Now, what's interesting about this one is, according to the bibliophile thing, it seems to be insinuating that you'll be kind of sick to your stomach, not just dizzy happy, but like dizzy ill, because you don't want things turned into movies. And I totally disagree with that. I really actually enjoy when books are adapted into films.
Adapted into good films.
Good films,
when
right.
When they mess it up, the caveat. We get
mad. Right.
That's there's when just, I get dizzy. Been
amazingly well-adapted novels, and I see no reason to get mad about it.
Name one.
Blindness.
Oh, I hadn't seen that one, so... But I heard
neither
it was
vibe, but exactly. I heard it was amazing, and the book was supposedly amazing. I haven't read it either. But,
Children of Men.
I thought it was brilliant.
I thought the movie was quite good, yeah.
Yep. See? So there. At least two.
Suck on that. And both
totally
sort of science fiction based. How fun. That's great.
Aren't we awesome?
We are great.
All right. So the next two are related. First off, we've got You'd Read in the Car If You Could.
Absolutely.
Wouldn't everybody? And the second part is, better yet, you'd take public transportation for reasons other than cost and the environment. And I gotta say, totally.
Yeah.
You take the bus because you don't have a car. And it's just, you know.
And I don't want to own a car.
Right. I would take the bus specifically so I could read. If, like, I had a day in the city or something on my own, I would totally take the bus just so I could read. And it would be completely for selfish reasons. However, I would also take the bus because of the environment, not cost. I could care less about the cost.
Well, I always have something to read when I'm on the bus. Like,
exactly.
I do that on purpose.
It's very convenient. Often, though, dream of having, I'm in California and we're hoping to get a train line. I dream of taking the train just so I can read on my way to Los Angeles.
Oh, like the super fast train, which takes like two hours to get to Los Angeles.
Exactly. Because I can't read in my car. Unfortunately, I will be able to once I get that third arm that I can control. But...
Yes, when you multitask while driving.
Exactly.
Oh, so filthy.
All right.
Anyway, number 16, used local and specialty bookstores are your kryptonite.
They're mine.
They're absolutely mine. You can't let me into a bookstore. You're not leaving for like an hour and a half at least.
At least. And I can't leave without spending $100 on books.
I can hold back unless I'm at Powell's City of Books in Portland, Oregon.
Oh.
Every time I've been there, I've spent like, at least $100.
It's like total book porn.
It's just amazing. They have enormous shelves, and the science fiction and fantasy section is enormous.
Totally. Oh, all right, next.
Orgasmic.
The New York Times review of books is among your browser bookmarks. Not!
No! I don't even care about the New York Times review of books.
Well, that's because they don't include enough Skiffy and Fanti.
They have more of it lately, but I just don't care.
I care about other people's opinions more than I care about the New York Times review of books. Basically.
Yeah, I mean, I trust more blogger opinions than I do the professional critics, and I think that's just mostly because a lot of the blogs that I follow, some of them have very similar tastes to me, so I know...
Right, and... Reviewers for the New York Times tend to be a little bit more literary and therefore less accepting of Skiffy and Fanti.
Yeah, although I'm discovering I'm becoming more of a literary snob, but not in the traditional sense. I'm becoming like a science fiction-y literary snob. It's like really weird.
That's okay.
Is it?
Maybe. Who knows?
I'm becoming like the New York Times review version, or take any sort of like literary magazine that does book reviews, right? And like they're really conservative about what they like in literary stuff. I'm becoming that, but the science fiction version of it.
That's dumb.
It's dumb, but I'm just like, I get really picky now. But anyway, so number 18.
Right. You start a book blog just for the ARCs.
Nope, I didn't do that. I started a blog for a completely different reason, actually.
And then I started one specifically because I wanted free books.
And how did that work out for you?
My computer crashed. Just kidding. It didn't work out well, but only because I didn't, you know, actually try. However, I'm only friends with you so I can get your ARCs.
Yeah,
does that count?
But listen very carefully, folks. This is what happens when you create a blog specifically to get free books from publishers, your computer will die. I'm serious. They have devised a virus that the big, like, six publishers have devised a virus that specifically looks for people who do this and then kills your computer.
It's evil, I tell you.
It is. It's all authoritarian. It was invented by the RIAA, you know, the whatever, the evil copyright whatever people.
I'm sure it was. All right, number 20. You find Belle the least offensive of the Disney princesses. Why? Because she likes reading and is intellectual. And though I actually like many Disney princesses, I have to say she is my favorite because she was reading all the time.
I disagree. I like Mulan because she gets a sword.
Oh, see, Mulan became my favorite later on. But earlier, Disney princesses, Belle was totally
I find a Belle really rather offensive. And the note for this particular one makes sense. When I think about it, like, she's a prisoner.
Stockholm Syndrome. Oh, completely.
And, like, I'm kind of, I don't know, I don't feel good about that. That's kind of not good.
Yeah, but you can find other equally horrible things about the rest of them. Except for Mulan, who is awesome.
I don't know. Snow White hangs out with a bunch of dwarves. She seems to have fun, and she, like, dances around and sings songs and plays music.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm not going to go there in this particular discussion because it would take a while. But trust me when I say...
hanging out with dwarves?
It's not good. Just look up some literary criticism about Snow White, and you will be thoroughly disturbed.
But they're happy dwarves.
Whatever.
Except for Grumpy. All right. He's not happy, but then he's never happy.
And he's my favorite. All right, number 22. Okay, the only reason I'm mentioning this one is because I actually fit every single thing in this category.
You're such a loser.
I am. Apparently, I didn't know I was a loser until I read this, and then I'm like, oh my god, I'm totally a loser. All right, so number 22. You own a cat, a grand selection of tea and or coffee, an all-purpose tote bag for shopping that may or may not be constructed of post-consumer recycled products, a knitting habit, or some combination of thereof. Well, guess what? I have a cat. I have way too much tea. I have a tote bag that's made of recycled products and carries around my knitting supplies. So, yeah.
I didn't know you knit.
See, I just took it up like a year ago, and I was like, what? I didn't know knitting made you a bibliophile, but apparently you need something to do with your hands when you're not reading. I don't even get it. I would think that knitting would be, like, totally against being a bibliophile because you can't have a book in your hands. But apparently, if you're, like, an old lady with cats and tea, you're a bibliophile.
But you're not an old lady.
Yeah, but I might as well be based on my hobbies.
Yeah, you're kind of, well, I mean, you kind
I also do embroidery. Just trust me when I say I'm an old lady.
God, you are. And you have an obsession with stationery, so you're definitely like a Great Depression grandma here, so.
Yeah, or very Victorian. Who knows? Except that I swear a lot.
Yeah, you're filthy. And you're, you know, a heathen, so.
That too. And a communist.
Godless heathen commie. Anyway. Those fit so well together.
Yeah, don't they, though? All right, number 26.
You actually know the difference between your, their, and its.
And if you can't notice the difference over the podcast, that's because you don't know the difference in real life either.
Yeah, this is true. And we both know these very well. In fact, I suspect they bother both of us when they're misused regularly and on purpose.
Yes, they do. And I'm not even that big of a grandma phone or whatever you call people who are into grammar. But seriously, it's one of the most annoying things ever.
Yep. And I'm a teacher, so I've got every time I get somebody who uses one of these wrong.
Totally.
Yeah, especially possessives.
Well, that's typical.
Because it's just one of those words like IT apostrophe S is not actually the possessive.
Right, we know that.
But I mean, in other instances in which you have an apostrophe S, it is, and so it gets
people
confusing.
People confuse the two, and yeah. They're idiots.
But that's because they don't teach things in school, so. My kids exactly. Don't even know what Fast Times at Ridgemont High is, so.
Ooh, that's sad.
It is. Why am I calling them kids? They're like 18, 19, 20 years old.
And you're only like, what, 26? So yeah, shut up.
I'm going to be 27.
I can call them kids. I can call them kids. All right.
Yeah.
Number 30. You think Kindles, Nooks, iPads, and other electronic books take a little something away from the reading experience?
No. Well, kind of. No. Well, but that's a different argument. But I mean, I just think that they're leading us to the death of literature, but not
what?
Because they are intentionally doing that.
I think you're an idiot.
I am anti-self-publishing.
Oh, well, in that sense, see, they're talking about e-readers here, and I have no problem with e-readers. E-books, maybe, but, and I suppose e-readers lead to e-books.
Yes, they do.
But no, I'm sorry. You're still going to have good books published in e-book format.
I know, but we had a discussion about this in another podcast, another one of the podcasts, and I don't know if you were there for that one, but I'm not going to go over that again because that was me talking about some literary agent who hated his job and was talking about how electronic books were going to change literature for what he thought was the best, and I thought that was a terrible thing. But anyway, maybe we should just skip the number 41.
All right.
Which is one that drives me up the friggin' wall.
That's why I'm going to leave this one to you.
The word abridged gives you a migraine. It doesn't give me a migraine. It makes me want to commit homicide.
There's a couple of things that make you want to commit homicide in this list.
Yes, there are. But this specifically makes me want to commit homicide. You know why? Because audiobook people like to hide that. I just
they do. Except that you kind of have to assume that if it's an audiobook, it's probably abridged.
It shouldn't be. Nothing should be abridged. When I was in England, I went to this bookstore and they had all of the Terry Pratchett stuff on audiobook for dirt cheap. And I was really excited. And you know what? I had to like read every word to tell if it was abridged because they put the abridged in like fine print. And then when I found out, I was really, really upset.
I'm really sorry about that.
I was very upset. I might have committed homicide while I was there. I may be a wanted man in England now.
Yeah, according to this one, I'm not a bibliophile because it really just doesn't bother me. I mean, a little bit. I mean, a small part of me dies inside, but not a very big part. And I don't miss that part.
Well, I mean, this makes sense because you are a godless heathen commie, so.
Oh, right. All right. Number 46, which obviously we do this. You sell your clothes and other possessions before you sell your books.
Absolutely. Duh.
Completely.
Yeah, I'd sell you before I sold my books.
I just make sure you sell me to somebody nice, please.
I probably wouldn't. I would sell you into slave labor.
I guess I'll survive.
Probably not. I didn't specify what kind of labor.
All right. In connection with this, we have number 48. You're reluctant to lend out your books.
I am.
Obviously, if we, you know, are going to sell basically every other thing that we own before we sell our books, yes, we're a little bit reluctant to lend out our books.
And I learned my lesson because I let some people borrow some books and never got those books back.
Yeah, I probably have a couple of your books.
No, I don't think it wasn't you because I still talk to you like on a regular basis. Oh. And if you took one of my books, I would send my assassins after you. But
yeah, no, I remember at one point we lent a friend a book and I didn't see it for almost 2 years. And I seriously was going to kill both my husband and his friend who borrowed the book because I blamed my husband completely for his failings in lending his friend a book. And yes, I almost committed homicide until I got the book back and then I was okay.
Yeah.
And now it's safely on my shelf. But the only reason I really cared about it is because it was signed.
Well, why would you ever lend a signed book out?
Because it was the only copy I had.
No, you never do that. Never lend a signed copy of a book out, ever.
I know I shouldn't have, but it was the Cryptonomicon, which I think everybody on the planet should read, so I'm willing to lend it out to people.
No. No, under no circumstances do you give a signed copy of the Cryptonomicon out. No.
I know. In hindsight, it was really stupid, and I'm never lending it out again.
Your bibliophile identity card has been temporarily revoked.
Whatever.
Yep.
Knit, bitch.
You're on probation for a year now. I'm sorry. But after that, I have to. It's one of the bylaws. I can't help it.
I know. And I also do another thing that you consider absolutely sacrilege.
Yes.
dog earring your pages.
Yep, number 49 is.
I do it.
It's just you can't.
I'm sorry. I only do it to my own books. If I own the book, I consider it love.
Bookmarks are really easy.
I know, but they're just not the same. I like the curve in my page. It's attractive to me.
Well, I guess you do like crooked things, so.
I like the crease. It's.
You're never one for the straight kind, I guess.
No, I guess not. I'm a little bit gay. I'm not sure how we got from creases to gay.
I didn't say gay. But... I was just pointing out that you're not into straight things, just crooked things. You went that direction. I don't know what you're talking about, lady. Point is,
anyway,
dog earring is sacrilegious. It's actually in the Bible. It's the 11th commandment.
Yeah, and you said you would kill people on buses. And have.
I have. I've committed homicide 3 times over this.
Well, good for you. Just don't kill me.
Every time somebody dies on a bus, it's probably me killing them for dog-earing a book.
Why am I still alive, then?
Because I've never been on a bus with you when you dog-eared.
Oh, right. Of course. All right, number 62.
Every kid in your English class hated you.
Yes, half of them.
No, I didn't have this, but I did have a teacher dislike me, I think, slightly. In my senior year of high school... Because we had to do, our project was, we had to work with a friend or somebody in the class, and we had to make our own version of Beowulf.
Ooh.
And he and I did, like, I don't know, three weeks of research. It was really bad research, but it was research anyway. And, like, came up with our own map of England with our own, and, like, this whole adventure and journey to, like, to do the whole deal. And we wrote the poem, like, in Beowulf poet style. And everything, and the teacher had been expecting, like, 6 to 8 pages, you know, a fairly small little thing.
Right.
And I walk into a class with a 31-page epic poem and slam it down on her desk, and her eyes went completely wide. She could not believe it. I spent, like, a week and a half writing this thing and was up all night finishing it, and it's now kind of awful, but it was amazing. Her eyes were, like, just twice as big. Yeah, it was fantastic.
So you had an epic Beowulf experience.
That's actually what got me into writing fantasy.
That's pretty cool.
So, and I wish I could thank that teacher, because that teacher really got me into writing. Like, I wanted to do that. So
I'm impressed that you did that, because yeah. I didn't do anything like that. People just hated me because I was good at English and never bothered to actually pay attention in class. Basically.
I've had that experience, though. I took a class with one of my friends from where I grew up in college. It was like a lit course, and I would never read for the class, and nope. I would get an A on everything, and he would read and study, and he could barely get a B.
Exactly. I had the same problem all through high school, and it was pretty awful, and I would read science fiction or fantasy novels in class, like all through school. I mean, I did this literally all through school, but in high school it was a problem because you had to actually answer questions in high school, you know, and actually sort of pay attention, kind of, but I didn't. And so everybody hated me, and I always had better, you know, I had better answers than other people. And not everybody, though, because there were some absolute geniuses. One of my best friends who was in my English classes with me is now an English teacher, and she's a genius. So,
like me.
Exactly. So it wasn't everybody, but I was one of the more hated kids in my English class.
Well, that's good. And I would stab you.
Probably.
For reading in class. No, I wouldn't, because I would actually, that's a good reason to be in trouble.
Exactly. Yeah. I think so.
And so we're going to get to the last one so we can not ramble for another 12 hours, but this is an easy one. Number 75. You really, 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 really like books.
Yes. And as long as you really, 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 really like books, you're apparently a bibliophile.
Yes. And just to run down the credentials, if it's not already obvious that we really like books by the fact that we're doing a podcast, which is at least a part about books, if that's not obvious, then at least the fact that, you know, she uses the library, the STD uses the library, like the same way she does her cocaine addiction.
Right, totally.
And I have more books than I have of anything else in my house.
Plus, so. I have a cat. I knit. I own a recycled bag. And what was the last one?
I think
a grand selection of tea and or coffee.
Yeah.
So obviously I'm a bibliophile.
Yeah. And so we'll post the link, because I would actually like to hear, you know, which ones of these apply to you guys. So, yeah, we'll post a link to it. But, yeah, there's no really good way to end this segment now.
Basically, we're ending this segment.
Welcome back, and we're here with our main segment, which is actually kind of a two-parter, because it's based on the same discussion, but in two different places. So, at some point this month, this new book called Never Again was released, and it's a book of stories that are anti-racist or anti-fascist, and there were two places they talked about it. It's noobworld.com and legoti.net. And two issues came up. In the first case, there was an issue having to do with an author who had complained that he had been blacklisted. And then one of the editors coming out and saying that the author hadn't been considered. It's an invitation only. They hadn't considered this person because there had been a personal argument or altercation or problem of some description between the two of them. And this sort of led into this whole big deal about whether or not it was ethical and yada, yada, yada. And I think we should talk about that one first before we go into the second one, because the second one, I think, I don't want to get muddled by this. But so right. I guess the question is you know, what is ethical for selecting what does and does not fit in your antho? What's right in approaching people? I don't know.
Honestly, if you're making an invitation only, you're making an invitation only for a reason. And it's because you have specific ideas in mind for what you want to be included. You have specific ideas about who's going to be writing, what they've probably already written about in the past, mm-hmm. and therefore you think it's going to be a good fit. And if you happen to have had an altercation with one person that may or may not fit,
in this case,
but you don't have to include them. There's no, like, you know, moral contract that anthology editors sign. They're pretty much allowed to do anything. Should they be allowed to do anything? Yeah, I think they should. I don't think it's an issue. Obviously, this particular writer was pissed off, but he shouldn't have pissed off an editor.
Well, it's kind of like, what did he expect? Like, I mean,
right.
You know, if I don't like you personally, the chances of me wanting to work with you on some professional capacity are not be very high. I mean, it's just like, you know, if you work in a workplace and you're a total, you know, jerk to your boss, chances
you're going to get fired.
They're not going to want to work with you or whatever, you know? I mean,
right.
It doesn't matter how good you are at your job if you're toxic to the environment. I mean,
right.
And so
if you make it harder for the person, for whatever reason, even if it is a personal reason, to do their job, you're just not going to get included. And though I kind of saw the guy's point, he had this whole argument about how, well, it's a book that's anti-fascist and you're being fascist. I suppose, but I think that's kind of a lame duck sort of argument. It's like,
not even really a good argument, because the fact of the matter is, it's like, well, then I should just let anybody come into my house because, you know, you're only selective about who's allowed in your house.
Right.
Or you know, just in general, like,
your home is a fascist government.
Right. I mean, like, you know, or who you associate with. I mean, you don't associate with people you don't get along with.
Right. And that has nothing to do with fascism. To say that that's fascist is, I think, diminishing the evil that is fascism.
Yeah, I agree. And to be fair, I mean, he and the author and the editor, I mean, neither of them really come at this from a very objective or, I guess, professional way. I mean, they're kind of both, like, throwing stuff at each other and acting kind of like idiots. But But, you know, I mean, they do make a good point in some of the bystanders who sort of come in and point out stuff. Like, you know, the editor makes a good point. Like, the editors have a right not to work with people that they don't want to work with. And totally. I think that editors have a right. You know, whether or not those decisions, you know, cross other lines, which we'll talk about the second issue, you know, that's a whole different – that's – I mean, yeah, you could still cross lines with this. But, I mean, in this case, we're talking about a personal thing and
– Right. And I don't think it's going to diminish the – importance of the book because they didn't include this one guy because of personal reasons. I mean, he might try to make some big, you know, deal out of it and it might get a little bit of play, but not enough to actually destroy the work that they're trying to do. So, and you know, sure, he got upset and good for him, you know, go ahead and get upset, but don't air it on a public message board because you have a personal issue with an editor.
That was the point he made, though. He wanted like people to see the evil
going on. Right, it's just stupid. It's not evil. It's just a personal argument.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I absolutely agree.
He's acting like a baby. That's basically what I'm trying to say.
He is. And he's trying to make it seem like there's some sort of evil conspiracy, too, because he uses the phrase blacklisted a number of times. And my understanding of blacklisted wasn't that you got, like, blacklisted by one person. Like, it was like you shared it among people.
Right, that everybody refused to associate with you.
Right, like the communist blacklisting during McCarthyism and stuff. So
right.
You know, and that's not what's happening. It was just one editor who publicly said, yeah, I didn't select you because we had an altercation. So
right. It's not like... I'm sorry. Basically, editors should have that right. And making a big fuss over it is pointless.
Well, I would say pointless, but just childish, I think.
Childish, exactly. Over a personal issue. I mean, you can have other issues with their book, which is going to be the second part of this discussion. Yeah. But going on the personal issues with the editor, I think it's moot.
Absolutely, absolutely. I think we both agree that the editor has a right to not work with people they don't like. That's
total
simple reality. If I ever edited an anthology, there are a whole lot of people I would never approach.
Exactly. Stories.
There are a lot of people I would approach, but
right.
And you know what? I'm sure those people would be, oh, you didn't approach me because we don't agree on something, or I was mean. And I'm like, yeah, that's exactly why I didn't approach you. I don't want to work with you
because I'm petty. So there.
I don't think it's petty though. It's just
no,
that,
it isn't.
I mean, you know, there are just people you don't want to work with.
No, agreed.
You know, I wouldn't want to work with Bill O'Reilly.
Oh my God, or Glenn Beck.
Well, you know, maybe they had something interesting to say. Like, maybe I would put together a book of, like, conservative talk points or something. Like, they would be perfect people to go to, but there's no way in hell I would work with either of them.
Nope.
You know?
I wouldn't work with anybody that had conservative talk points, but...
I wouldn't do the MSNBC version either, by the way. Just so it doesn't seem like I'm being biased. Like, I would not want to do the whole MSNBC, because MSNBC is just the liberal version of Fox News now, so...
Yeah, that's true. I don't like either.
I'm not a fan of it. I don't like the stuff in the middle either. I like NPR. That's pretty much it.
Yeah, so. Basically.
Yeah, but moving on to, I guess, the second point now, which is, I think, maybe a little bit more controversial or could be more controversial. I'm surprised it hasn't been taken up yet. Give it a day. It'll happen. Another race fail, I'm sure, which will suck, but that'll be the second one this year, by the way, because there's already a race fail 10. And there was one last year, and I'm sure there were like 12 more for the years preceding that. But the anthology apparently contains basically no people of color. And since it was invite only, it was brought up in another thread that the fact that since it's invite only, that means that they didn't bring in any people of color. They didn't approach any people, or at least that was the implication, is that they didn't approach any people of color. And the editors basically admit that they didn't. But
they say that it was only because they lacked, in the United Kingdom, a large field or even any field of people of color that are writing in the weird genre.
Yeah, and
which
I'm not
is
sure what
specifically
they mean by
what Never Again is. Well, I assume that they're going with probably new weird, but who knows?
Possibly, yeah.
But since this specifically is about, you know,
anti-racism.
Anti-racism.
Yeah.
It seems strange to not include, particularly in the UK, where white people obviously don't have a huge problem with racism, at least targeted at them, the fact, I mean, I'm not saying that white people can't be against racism. I'm just saying that the experience is incredibly different and possibly less meaningless. And therefore, it might have been a good idea to find people who had experienced racism directly to write in this genre.
It would give a different perspective. I think that's...
Right, exactly. And if you only have a white person's perspective through an anthology on anti-racism, I just don't see the point.
I see the point, but I think it could have been more diverse. I think it would have been more appropriate for it to have been more diverse, just because something I had said off podcast was that just because white people write about against racism doesn't somehow devalue their opinions on that. I mean, that opinion is equally valuable, but I think that they really needed to have some sort of non-white opinion on here, some sort of perspective, because I think that's really relevant, because, you know, if you're only getting one side of the story, and I hope that maybe they try to do another anthology in which they have all people of color, because it would be, I think, a nice contrast.
Agreed. But it is an important point to bring up for this, only because they didn't reach out to anybody of color, and I think it was very short-sighted on their part.
It's
unless
they
do
they
have plans
it's
to do a second book, obviously.
It's very interesting because, like, I get the impression that they just didn't know anybody. Like,
get the impression that they just didn't even think about it, which is weird considering they were collecting an anthology of short stories on, you know, anti-racism. But I honestly, I mean, coming from a position of power, in the white position, it's totally privileged. And we do, I'm sorry, we have a tendency not to think about it. It's not something that really enters our dialogue on a daily basis. So we don't purposefully do it, but we do have a tendency to just kind of forget.
Right.
And yeah, they probably weren't thinking about it, but the fact that they weren't thinking about it, I think, was the fail on their part.
Well, I don't know if that's so much the fail, because I get the argument that they make, which is the argument that, you know, they're looking for the good stories. And so since it's invite only, they were intentionally looking for people that they were familiar with as good writers.
In the weird genre specifically, which I think is an important point. It's a smaller genre, presumably.
And I would think a largely white genre, unfortunately. But I do think they needed to approach more. It's just it is very odd that they did come up, well, just because of the subject matter.
Right.
But I don't know. I mean, it's really hard for me to say whether or not that they're, as you say, that they just didn't think about it, or whether or not they just didn't know anybody, or, you know, because, I mean, there are a lot of factors we just don't know. We don't know. I don't know. But it just...
I don't know. I mean, at one point, one of the editors says, there are relatively few non-white writers of horror or supernatural fiction in the UK. I guess that's what they mean by weird. And it happened that none of the writers whom we targeted on account of their fiction were non-white. Would you have preferred us to target and include writers on the basis of their skin color, not their writing? And I see his point, you know, that they weren't thinking about it. I see your point that they were more focused on the quality of the writing. But I really think they should have thought about it. And I mean, it harkens back to that conversation you had about the feminists, the science fiction anthology. I'm sorry, but the science fiction anthology that did not include a lot of women. I honestly didn't get the big deal. He approached women. He at least approached women to get into his anthology.
Right.
These people didn't even bother because the writing wasn't good enough within the genre community, I guess.
Right. I mean, I can understand that. Like, if they had had people, they, like, oh, we know these people write, but they're not at the, they don't write the kind of style or whatever we're looking for. I can understand that argument because that makes sense. But, I mean, there have got to be others. I mean, some of the people that they named as examples of who they could have gone to, I think were really poor examples. Like, they would name a bunch of people that were not really British, which didn't make any sense. I mean, like, you know, you had, like, Nalo Hopkinson, who's technically, I think, from a British colony, but now she lives in Canada, and it's like, they were intentionally, the anthology is intentionally a UK author anthology.
Except that they included an American.
Well, then that they included an American, really?
Supposedly. Joe Lansdale.
Is Joe Lansdale an American? I thought he was, but I wasn't sure. Because if that's so, then they're just ass monkeys.
Basically.
Because that's ridiculous. Because then there's no excuse whatsoever. They could have gone to, I don't know, a half dozen
people. Maybe he lives in the United Kingdom, but yeah.
Yeah, he's an American author.
He lives in Texas. So basically, they just rendered themselves completely pointless.
Oh, no, absolutely. Because they can't even make the argument that they just picked Yokai. Oh, no, this is bullcrap. This is total BS. Because then, no. Because I can understand, like, oh, we were only weird fiction of UK weird fiction. That makes sense. Like, there wouldn't be a lot of people of color in such a very small subset of literature. But right. Now we're talking about weird literature outside of that, too. I mean, if you're including an American, then that meant you could have gone to dozens and dozens and dozens of high-quality writers. I mean, why couldn't they have gone to maybe, like, I don't know, Haruki Murakami?
An
Asian writer who writes literary sort of weird. I mean, I don't know what's in the anthos, so I don't know what style they're looking for, but...
Oh, yeah, and they have an Australian. That's what's interesting. He says, you know, we are focusing on UK writers in the weird fiction genre with only a couple of well-known US writers whom we asked for reprints and one Australian with whom the other editor happened to be in touch with.
No, I'm calling total BS on this now. You can't be like, oh, we're all UK, but we kind of went and got a couple other guys. Well, I'm sorry, but you could have instead of gotten those Americans and Australian, you could have got some maybe American, Canadian, or Caribbean people of color who write weird fiction, whatever weird is. I mean, whether that's new weird or that's just fiction that is maybe sort of fantastic in a way or whatever. This is BS. This is total garbage. I didn't know that beforehand. Now I am completely like, this is, no. You don't get away
totally
with this
against
one.
It. Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. This is crap. Come on. Really?
I think it's very short-sighted on their part.
I don't even think it's short-sighted. I think it's worse than short-sighted. I wouldn't say it's racist just because I don't...
No, I think it's, like I said, I think they really honestly... I mean, he tries to argue that, well, would you have preferred that we targeted them based on their color of skin? Which, again, is like, if that's your fallback argument, you're an idiot, frankly.
In this case, it is, because this is not a case of just, oh, we just want... Well, like... I mean, what were they just not aware that there were people of color who write this kinds of fiction? I mean, what? I mean, you couldn't have been that...
His argument is that there aren't that many in the United Kingdom that aren't white.
Well, but we just discussed. Well, I'm sorry, but you
Except
included
that they
an Australian
people.
And an American.
Tumor, apparently.
Oh, well, then it's unacceptable. That is unacceptable. You cannot make that argument. There's just not enough UK writers, but we'll include Americans. And it's like, well, I'm sorry, but America is not UK. Not the same place.
Right. Nalo Hopkinson is Canadian, so they couldn't include her.
And that's BS, too, since wasn't part of Canada originally part of the UK?
I think it's... Oh, yeah, totally. It was a UK colony for a long time.
And
it was...
Wasn't it sold over to the French, or... I don't remember.
I don't know anything about Canada.
I know very little about Canada. Maybe some Canadian people can correct us on the history, because I'm not 100% sure. I apologize. But even so, because she was Canadian, they couldn't have included her. I mean, unless they were making the argument that, like, they were doing UK or former British Commonwealth, in which case there are still, I mean, you had America. I mean, parts
India?
Of the Caribbean. India.
Hello?
India. I mean, come on. Think about why couldn't they have got, like, Salman Rushdie? Or, I mean, maybe he would have been too high profile, so maybe they couldn't have afforded him. But there are dozens of Indian weird science fiction, fantasy, whatever authors who were writing that they could have got. It's just, ugh. Screw them.
All right. So we've totally decided that however good the intentions of Never Again might have been, they receive a big fat F. Fail.
Total fail. Losers.
They can pick whoever they want, but in this case, they failed.
I mean, you can still not pick people of color if that's what you choose, but just now you're just being a jerk.
Or an idiot.
Or racist, I guess. You can make the argument that there's a certain tinge of racism there.
That their anti-racist, anti-fascist book is both fascist and racist.
Well, I wouldn't say fascist, but I would certainly say that they're not. Well, I'm hesitant to call anybody racist, really.
I don't think they're racist. I honestly
I think they're idiots.
They're idiots, exactly.
Even more so than the guy that we talked about a number of episodes ago, the feminist issue. Even more so than that guy, because these guys didn't even approach anybody.
Exactly, and I honestly don't think that that guy was that much of an idiot.
Right, right. Well, right, but we're kind of the
minority. That was that discussion. Exactly.
Alrighty, well, it seems like we got the point across. These guys, it's kind of interesting because there's an evolution of it. We started with kind of like, not quite, like kind of moderate, or at least I was, and then now I'm like totally against these guys, so.
Yeah.
I'm going to send them hate mail. I should leave the email address. You guys can send them hate mail because these guys are, gotta be kidding me.
Fail.
Yeah, total fail. Alrighty, guys. So we're just going to leave it at that. They're jerks. So we'll come back with our last segment, the reading writing segment, just after the porn music. So. And we're back with our reading and writing section. I'm going to leave that to you, Jen, because I don't know what I'm reading.
I still haven't finished freaking Perdido Street Station.
You're on like page 672 now, right?
Basically. I think the last 3-4 podcasts, that I don't know how many have I done. I think every single one of them I was reading Perdido Street Station. And I'm still freaking working on it. I literally am, I'm maybe 50 pages from the end. I'm having the hardest time finishing this damn book. And actually the last, 100 or so pages are probably the most exciting part. But I had to stop reading when I had to leave the pool. So I couldn't finish the stupid book. And I haven't had time since then.
Aww.
So I'm stuck in this perpetual fog of Perdido Street Station. I don't think I'm ever going to get out. But once I do, I've got such a wonderful, beautiful stack of books to read. It's making me sad.
I'm sorry. Well, I'm sorry?
I said, are you not reading anything? Is that why you stuck it on me?
I'm just reading the same stuff I was reading last time because I'm in the middle of trying to finish this paper. And so that's basically what I'm reading. It's just Tobias Bekele, like in-depth Tobias Bekele. Although I did finish the stories from the Whispers from the Cotton Root Tree, I think it's called, edited by Nato Hopkinson, which is this Kirby and Fabulous writing. Mm-hmm. And we read a bunch of short stories from there, and they're really weird and fascinating stuff.
Send it to me.
I
demand it.
I can't send it to you until I'm done with the paper.
Oh, okay, fine.
Sorry.
That's okay. I'll talk to you later.
I may or may not talk about the stuff in there, but I don't know yet. Yeah, so I mean, that's mostly okay. That's what I'm reading at this point, but I am writing now or working on my final paper for the class I just finished, which is on Caribbean science fiction, of which there's very little.
Right.
And it's very interesting, or at least I think it's interesting, what I'm trying to do, but we'll see if it works. It's proving to be very difficult. And of course I'm not writing anything other than that. I'm a terrible writer. I don't think this whole time we've done this podcast, I've ever been writing actual fiction.
Well, you're busy with school. That's just important. And obviously I haven't been writing anything because I'm not a writer.
I know, but you're a heathen communist, so whatever.
Exactly. I've been jotting down notes. I've been jotting down notes for my future novels.
Well, you have a typewriter now, so we should do some sort of, like, letter thing.
We should. An epistolary novel.
We could. I wanted to do that with a certain other person, but I think I'd have much more fun doing it with you because that person was a picky douche nozzle, so...
And I'm not writing you anything romantic, so get over that now.
Well, that's not what it was going to be about. Although, well, it was a romantic story, sort of, but it was science fiction.
Right. That would. Oh, and since robots are the next vampires, we should write a romantic robot epistolary novel.
Okay, we should do that. We'll talk about it some more. Maybe a podcast. We'll come up with maybe a plot, and we should do something. That'd be really fun. We can maybe make a blog for it and force our readers to read it.
Exactly. Nobody steal our ideas.
It's our idea. We're copywriting it right now. I just submitted a patent, so suck on that, guys.
Patent. It's a patent. It's not a patent.
I'm sorry. I can't. I say it like the British. Patent.
Anyway, folks, we'll see you next
week. No, we have a question of the week.
Well, why? Just kidding. Okay. Question of the week. Yay!
I wish I had, like, the sound from the soccer games, you know, that really annoying,
the vuvuzela.
Yeah.
All right, question of the week. What new or upcoming science fiction or fantasy films are you most excited about? How about you, Duke?
I don't know.
What?
Oh, no, Inception. It just came out, and I was supposed to see it tonight, but that fell through, and so I'm going to cry now because I really need to see it, and all of my students are, like, getting really excited, and they want to tell me, and I'm like, you can't say anything
just,
or I will fail you.
Just go watch it on your own.
I can't go to movies by myself. I feel like a pedophile.
I'd go with you, but I'm like, you know, a plane flight away, and I can't afford it, so.
I know. Yeah, that's what I'm really excited about. Beyond that, I mean, there are a couple of stuff, you know, like what is that?
The one that I'm excited about? Monsters?
Oh, yeah, I'm really excited about that, too.
I'm super excited about that one.
Something to do with alien invasion evil.
As you said, Jurassic Park meets, Independence Day? Awesome.
Yes, it sounds like Jurassic Park meets Independence Day. I'm very excited about that, and I'm excited about what's the one we talked about last time. What was the name of that? Never Let You Go?
Ooh, yeah.
Yeah, I'm excited about that, too. And I don't know what else is coming out this year, actually. I totally spaced. Well, anyway, they can tell us, maybe, and they'll remind us of some stories. So, you know, let us know what upcoming or new, just released film that you're excited about.
Indeed.
And if you want to let us know, you can send us an email at skiffyandfanty@gmail.com. You can send us a voicemail at 206-203-1686. Or you can leave a comment at our WordPress page, which is skiffyandfanty.wordpress.com. And, of course, you can follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/skiffyandfanty. And you can send us an app message through there, which would be fun. And of course, if you're on iTunes, we appreciate reviews.
Yay!
Pretty please.
If you want to.
It might work if you grovel.
I don't grovel, but I will hold a gun to their heads.
Oh, well that's totally the same thing.
Exactly. Have a good week, everybody.
All right, bye-bye.
Autobots, roll out!